There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reiswinnell, and I'm your host. On today's program, the Free Music Archive. I'll be speaking with Ken Friedman. He's the station manager of WFMU Community Radio in Jersey City, New Jersey, and it's the station which is putting together and sponsoring this archive of music which is free to use and share on the internet. You do want to stay tuned. Ken Friedman is the station manager for the freeform, listener-sponsored radio station WFMU 91.9 FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. And that station has taken on a really interesting project to help pave the way for freer music, for radio, for podcasting, for all sorts of uses. And it's called the Free Music Archive. Ken tells us more about this project in this interview.
The Free Music Archive is a social music website, an online library that's comprised of music that is licensed by its rights holders and its creators to be available freely for download and streaming. And I think there are a number of other what might be described as pod-safe libraries out there. The thing that sets the Free Music Archive apart, or what will set it apart, is that we're trying to combine the curatorial approach that radio has historically taken along with the community-generated approach of social media. So in many ways, it's like Web 1.5. It's like stepping backwards a bit and trying to get radio stations as well as music fans and clubs and music festivals all around the country and all around the world to start licensing music to add to this commons, to add to the library, so that people can have a huge online repository of interesting, diverse music that can freely be used for any number of different non-commercial purposes. Everything's going to be licensed for free non-commercial use. The thing that really sets it apart probably from other sites like archive.org or CC Mixter or the Creative Commons movement is that we're trying to take an approach where it's not just people licensing their own music, which is, for the most part, that's what Creative Commons has been. It's been people licensing their own works. They write an article or they write their own song and they record their own song and then they license that. This is a little different. We're trying to take this approach of alternative copyright and bring it to other people who are not necessarily familiar with it. So we're bringing it to, say, a band comes to perform on WFMU, or a band performs at a club or a festival, and we go up to them and say, hey, would you license that one song to this online library? And they may never have heard of this notion. So we're bringing alternative licensing to the music community, as opposed to alternative copyright and alternative licensing really being just part of the a more legalistic and online community.
And so is that what you mean by a curatorial approach then? Is it the fact that the music archive is approaching artists and approaching people who you would like to see represented in this archive?
Right. That's the main difference, is that we're doing third-party licensing. We're not just doing first-party licensing.
And I noticed that you're talking a lot about live performances. Is that because you're trying to sidestep having to work directly with record labels who otherwise own the copyright typically on a particular artist's CD or album?
Well, no, live settings are the easiest situations to license in, to do an alternative or a Creative Commons license. There's no doubt that a live situation makes it easier because there are fewer rights holders. But one of the things that we're trying to do on the Free Music Archive that I don't believe anybody's attempted yet is to do licensing where there are multiple rights holders, so that we can approach a record label that's actually put out a commercial recording, and we can try to get them to sign off on their right, get the artist to sign off, the performing artist to sign off on their right, get the composer to sign off on their right, and get the publisher to sign off on their right. So we're actually creating a section of the site that allows people to attempt to license pieces of music where there are as many as four different rights holders. Because more successful artists and commercially available CDs, there are four different rights holders. Mm-hmm. There's the band, the songwriter, the publisher, and the record company. So we actually are setting up an interface where you can get all four different rights holders to log on to the same page and each on their own time schedule sign off on it. But that's obviously much more complicated than doing it in a live music setting.
It's a lot more complicated. But, you know, I guess we, in the last year or so, there's been some high-profile artists like Nine Inch Nails and Radiohead, which have, you know, quote-unquote, released their albums online for free, or at least, you know, without charge, not necessarily free in Creative Commons, though, like, say, Trent Reznor with Nine Inch Nails has pushed that boundary a bit more. How do you make the sale to record labels, you know, who, you know, are primarily making their money, making their living from selling intellectual property? How do you convince them to take part in the archive and to, you know, give up revenue?
Well, we're not asking them to license an entire CD. I think that a commercial record label would, you know, would probably be unwise to license an entire CD that they're trying to sell for non-commercial, you know, free download. But it's not very difficult to convince them to do one or two tracks for promotional reasons. It's already been happening left and right, but we're trying to do it in a slightly more formal way. It's already become really common for bands to put their music free on MySpace, for record labels to make some songs free on their website or on their MySpace page. So it's not much of a, it's no stretch at all, as a matter of fact, to convince record labels and artists that making some of their music freely available on the web has really good promotional value. That's not difficult. Everybody's already doing it. It's only slightly more difficult to then have them sign something where they're agreeing to do it under certain terms. But we have not found it difficult to do these things at all so far. We've been licensing music for the last year, even though we haven't launched the Free Music Archive site. And we're not finding it very difficult to get people to go along with this.
And what's interesting about this is that WFMU is a radio station. And it would seem that this actually lies a little bit outside of the sort of things that radio stations normally get involved in. And why is it that FMU is taking on this project?
Well, I guess the reality of radio in the current era that we live in had already led us down the licensing road. In 2003, we had to start getting record labels and artists to sign waivers with us to allow us to webcast their material free of the restrictions that the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, puts down. So we had already started going down the direct licensing route in 2003 just to allow us to put together a website that makes our listeners happy, that allows us to keep up with the current technology instead of being hamstrung by these extremely restrictive rules that the DMCA runs down. So that's one reason. We kind of already realized many years ago that if we really want to have the freedom that we've traditionally enjoyed as a radio station, we have to start licensing more stuff ourselves directly with the artists and the record labels that are part of our own community. But the other thing is that it's also becoming quite clear that radio as a model is on its way out for younger people. If we want to stay relevant, then we have to start addressing music fans in ways that are relevant to them, which means stepping away from the radio model altogether and moving towards a download model, and, you know, just getting onto people's iPods and you know, setting up a music site that allows people to use music and discuss music outside of a strict radio model. My kids are 11 and 13 years old, and they don't listen to radio. Their friends don't listen to radio. We recently had a 15-year-old girl do a radio show on FMU, and she posted on her Facebook page about the fact that she was doing a radio show on FMU, and all her friends got on there, and I read all the comments, and they were like, "Oh, that's great, Kaylee. I can't wait for the show." And I went down the entire list of comments, and the first comment from one of her friends was, "What's a radio?"
I mean, so then what's the strategy? Because, I mean, does that mean, you know, it's pushing WFMU from being a radio station into being a music distribution organization? Or is there also the ability that you gain out of this for you to have more of your programs, say, specifically podcasted for download because of the fact that the rights to include this music in these podcasts, which are downloadable and you know, freely duplicated, has already been, you know, obtained by the station?
Well, there's a lot of strategies, actually. I mean, you know, one strategy is that, yeah, FMU, I no longer see FMU strictly as a radio station. I see us more as a stream provider. And our main radio stream is our most important stream, but we also have a blog. That's a stream of articles and movies and music that's available on the blog. The Free Music Archive is going to be another stream. It's going to be an ongoing stream of music that can freely be downloaded and streamed and discussed and, you know, put together into playlists. So I think it's important for all radio stations to accept the fact that, you know, radio, as it's strictly been defined historically, is on its way out, but radio stations are very well positioned to become streaming providers of other types of streams of text, of music, of videos, and so on and so forth. So that's kind of how we're looking at it, and the Free Music Archive fits right into that. But actually, the Free Music Archive does have a lot of utility directly to radio stations, because all the music that's going to be licensed with the Free Music Archive is also going to be licensed to be free and clear of all the restrictions that the DMCA puts down. So it's going to be a repository of music that people can use, that broadcasters and webcasters and podcasters can use to create their own programs and podcasts and webcasts that are free of the DMCA.
Well, so what are some of the practical restrictions then that the DMCA places on, especially online broadcasters, that therefore you circumvent by using the Free Music Archive?
Well, there's a pre-publication prohibition, so you're actually not allowed to have a playlist and an archive published at the same time on the same website. You're restricted. You're not allowed to play, you know, more than three songs by a certain artist in a certain period of time. You're not allowed to put you're not allowed to play a certain number of songs from the same boxed set in the same period of time. You have to take your archives down after 2 weeks. You're not supposed to fast forward or rewind within an audio player. They go on and on, these restrictions. So it makes it very, very difficult to design software or hardware, for that matter, that appeals to people if you're going to do it legally. So the Free Music Archive will actually allow broadcasters and podcasters to freely program without having to worry about such idiotic restrictions. But it's also going to allow software developers and hardware developers to develop tools that also don't have to pay attention to these restrictions.
And these restrictions exist on any copyrighted piece of recorded music, pretty much regardless of the source, until and unless the owner of that copyright has otherwise changed the terms of the license, like they do with your Free Music Archive. Is that about correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And so that means you just can't take for granted, because it's an independent band or an independent label, that therefore they might have a different view of things than Warner Brothers Records does. The law says that you still have to observe these pretty strict restrictions on your archives and on your online stream.
Right. And I actually just realized that I didn't even mention the worst part of the DMCA restrictions, which is related. It's related to that. It's the rates. The rates that non-commercial stations have to pay are exorbitant. Unless you cap your audience at a certain very small level, the rates will go through the roof, to the point that even a charity, a university or a church or a not-for-profit group that's doing a live stream or making archive programming available, if they're successful, they could end up having to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Not to mention they're also going to be required to submit all the data on every single song they play 24 hours a day to SoundExchange. So that's another huge requirement that's unprecedented.
And these are licensing fees that you're paying basically to SoundExchange, which then distributes that to the two record labels who participate, to the basically the Recording Industry Association of America labels.
Yeah, correct. Theoretically, SoundExchange collects this money and then distributes it to the artist. The only problem is that they're also allowed to recoup any legal fees that they've incurred for the last 10 years or so in trying to set up this whole structure. And the other thing is that they have a terrible track record about being able to track down artists to actually pay them. Their website has a gigantic list, thousands and thousands of artists long, of artists who they've collected money for that they quote unquote cannot find, you know, including artists like Ted Nugent and, you know, the Pizzicato Five and Yola Tango and, you know, all sorts of really well-known artists that they somehow, for some reason, can't locate.
Mm-hmm. And so is it a goal then for WFMU to move towards exclusively playing music, for which it's these rights have been obtained, for which has been licensed to be used much more freely?
No, actually, that's not our goal at all.
Okay.
We're still going to have WFMU proper, but you know, it's becoming a multi-channeled universe, and this is just another way of engaging audiences, and especially engaging younger audiences in what we do and what we've been about.
And so you will have then other program streams or other program archives or podcasts which do take advantage of this music and therefore the greater flexibility and freedom it offers you, in addition to your regular FM obvious broadcast, which doesn't have to obey these DMCA restrictions, and then your live web stream.
Right. Yeah, we would hope to never have to restrict our DJs in any way. I would hope to never have to tell them, like, you can only play material out of the Free Music Archive. But what I do like is that if the restrictions get even worse than they are now, or other things happen in the future, then at least we have some room to negotiate, which is something that so far has been completely missing from the negotiations that people have been having with the RIAA and SoundExchange. The existence of something like the Free Music Archive, I hope, will make it possible for the non-commercial stations, at the very least, to negotiate more effectively. Because when it finally does launch, and when it does finally collect a really large library, which could take a year or so after launch, then we'll finally have an option where if SoundExchange is saying, well, the only way you can do this is by paying $100,000 a year, then stations will finally have an option and say, well, then we're going to use this other material instead. It's somewhat akin to the way BMI was born out of the problems with ASCAP.
Right, and those are the organizations which handle royalties for songwriters, not for the actual CDs, but for the songs themselves.
Right. But BMI was almost set up as a protest to ASCAP, in the same way that the Free Music Archive is in a way being set up as a protest to the DMCA.
But setting up a Free Music Archive, that takes resource. I mean, it takes human time, which is probably the reason why this hasn't been done yet, because it takes, you know, real labor to go out and identify bands and identify labels and to do the talking, to do the, you know, working with them, in addition to resources like server space and keeping things going on the internet. How does WFMU manage to keep that going? And you know, you're your nonprofit, you're a community radio station. Most community radio stations, even ones that are really big and successful, nevertheless, you know, you bring in far less revenue than a commercial station in your market. You're relying on donations. How are you keeping this? How did you get this project off the ground, and how are you keeping it going?
Well, we got it off the ground by applying for a grant from the New York State Music Fund, which was the fund of money that was set up by Eliot Spitzer when he was still Attorney General of New York. And the money came from payola payments. He was going to sue the biggest broadcasting and record biggest broadcasting companies and record labels for payola practices. And they settled with him out of court, and they set up this multi-million dollar fund, the New York State Music Fund, which was set up to encourage alternative music programming in New York, not just on the radio, but, you know, at clubs and festivals and music education and so on and so forth. So we got a grant out of that, and now we're looking for more grants. And we also hope that once it does launch, there will be a certain amount of donations that will come in from users of the site, and we'll see if it works.
And so do you have actual staff working on this project?
Yeah, we have. I hired one full-time person for it, and then we have the rest of the full-time staff at FMU who, you know, helps.
And is there strong support amongst your large staff? I mean, you have a pretty good both paid staff, and you have quite a large number of volunteer DJs. So is there wide support for this project?
Yeah, there is.
And so we mentioned that the website itself, the archive itself, has not yet launched, although you do have a weblog set up, correct?
Yeah, we set up a blog just because we've been licensing so much music, and we just thought it would be good to have. And we also have the domain, freemusicarchive.com and freemusicarchive.org. Rather than just having a holding page there, we decided to at least put a blog there prior to launch.
And so what is the roadmap for the project then?
Well, the plan is to launch with phase one of the project in November. Unfortunately, the date of our launch keeps getting pushed back. But it's a fairly massive project. And, you know, as we've gone into the details, especially with our licensing applications, we realized why nobody had ever tried this before. On one hand, it was a little daunting once we realized how complex it was. But on the other hand, it made me realize that this is a really necessary, important thing to do, because there's reasons why nobody does third-party music licensing, because it's incredibly complicated. So for us to set up an interface that does it means that it's needed. It also means that when it does launch, it's going to be a real unique tool that's going to have a lot of uses for a lot of different people. But we are planning on launching phase one in November. And then over the next year, we'll be rolling out more and more complicated features of the site. But when it starts off, it's going to be a fairly simple site of people can register for accounts. Whether or not they have an account, they can easily download or stream any music on the site. There's not going to be any pop-ups or any audio ads that show up. Registration is not going to be required. So there's not going to be any hurdles. One of the things that drives me crazy about a lot of music sites is that before you can start listening, you always have like five hurdles you have to jump through. So one of the things about the site, even when it launches in phase one, is anybody will be able to go to the site and begin listening to music or downloading music legally immediately without registration, without pop-ups, you know, without any jumping through hoops.
And then with the registration, will that work towards people who then want to upload and license their music for sharing? Is that the ultimate plan for that?
Sort of. Once people become members, then they can participate and start commenting on things and writing reviews. And then if they want to start remixing material and re-uploading their remixes, they can do that too. But it's not going to be a community-generated site in the sense that anybody will be able to upload their music to it. It's still going to be a curated music site, with the exception of the remixers. It's the music that goes onto the site is going to be determined by the different curating parties. Like WFMU will be a curator, and then hopefully we'll have a number of other radio stations, as well as individuals and eventually festivals and clubs who are also curating music for it.
So you really want to maintain this notion a lot like a record label, because one of the things that record labels have done very well is be tastemakers, to be people who, you know, are editors essentially in choosing good music and putting sort of a stamp of approval on it. So that's an idea you wish to continue and perpetuate with the Free Music Archive.
Yeah, definitely. That's why some people have joked and called it Web 1.5, because we are stepping back and allowing editors to make these decisions. But you know, our editors are hopefully going to have, you know, very, very wide taste. You know, we hope to get stuff in there from classical music to hip hop, you know, to rock and roll, to jazz, to experimental music, to spoken word, to radio programs. So we're going to take a really, really wide approach. But yeah, there are going to be curators and editors deciding what goes in and what doesn't go in. We've also looked at, you know, so many community generated music sites. And I think there's been a real problem with these community generated sites, because they tend to attract music that's been licensed by the people who made it. And that has acted as an automatic editorial filter. So there's tons of electronic music. There's tons of singer-songwriter music. There's tons of jam bands. But so many other types of music just are completely unrepresented on these sites. So we're trying to put together a site that's really going to be diverse. And that's why we feel that we have to, you know, master this challenge of third-party music licensing.
Well, Ken, it's a very exciting project. When I first heard about it, I was very excited when I saw you listing a job for it. And, you know, I think it's something which really needs to be done. And WFMU has always impressed me. I think I mentioned that to you before. And I'm really impressed to see a community radio station like WFMU take a lead in this sort of project. And I'm really looking forward to see how it goes.
Oh, thanks, Paul.
Thank you for taking some time to talk about it.
Sure.
And that was Ken Friedman, station manager of station WFMU 91.9 FM Freeform Music out of Jersey City, New Jersey. And their website is WFMU.org. You can learn more about the Free Music Archive and look at their weblog at freemusicarchive.org. And that brings to a close this edition of Media Geek. And I'll be back in one more week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at mediageek.net. The radio show, of course, is at radio.mediageek.net. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. And Media Geek is not just online, but is heard on great community radio stations all around North America, like WBCR, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick. That's in Canada, folks. And the original station for Media Geek, where it all got started, is WEFT Community Radio in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois. And if you'd like to hear Media Geek on your local non-commercial station, it's there on the website, radio.mediageek.net, to download. And just drop me a line, paul@mediageek.net. I'll be sure to mention you on the air. Thanks for tuning in.